responds to the cause. I do agree with established theory that, for the Confederates, the war was lost on the battlefield. Yet, many cumulative effects of the above handicaps unquestionably weakened and demoralized the army. Defeat in the West cannot thus be seen entirely through the prism of inept generals. If Lee's army came to symbolize what Gladhart termed the vitality of the Confederate States, then the Army of Tennessee came to represent the frailty of the Confederacy. Gladhart concluded that the defeat of the Army of Northern Virginia was not caused by industry, culture, the manpower shortage, or slavery, but rather by intense and sustained Union pressure that caused serious fissures in all these areas. The demise of the Army of Tennessee likewise did not come exclusively from internal army factors, outside influences, Northern policy and leadership, and the breakdown of the Southern home front also played a role. In light of so many shortcomings, why then did it take the better-equipped, supposedly better-led and larger Union Army of the Cumberland so long to neutralize its opponent? The answer to that question, beyond inept leadership, which was not confined to the Confederates, is also multidimensional. It revolves around a web of interconnected factors, such as the brotherhood of the Confederate soldiery, religious revivals which not only shielded the men from the stresses of war, but also emphasized God's providential blessing over the army, and, in the fog of war, a zealous belief that, even as late as 1864, the war was still quite winnable. If Thomas Connolly was the father of Western revisionism, Richard McMurray, more than any historian, developed a succinct Western theater thesis that the war stalemated in the East and was decided in the West. The Confederates lost the military phase of the war, McMurray concluded, and those battles took place in the West. To be sure, there were counterattacks from Eastern historians who insisted that the Virginia front was paramount, but the Virginia dominance of Civil War historiography has been seriously challenged. No manuscript can be completed without the encouragement, advice, and corrections of other scholars. My deep appreciation goes to Stephen Woodworth and Timothy Smith for plowing through some of the early chapters of the manuscript, and to Richard McMurray for reading a large number of the chapters. They are all veteran authors and friends. Earl Hess graciously sent me the advance galley of his now-published book, The Battle of Peachtree Creek, to aid me in my research. Anyone doing research at the Stones River and Chickamauga National Battlefield Parks will encounter Jim Lewis and Jim Ogden, both of whom know their subject better than anyone and are always willing to cooperate. As a member of the Historians of the Civil War Western Theater, I also bounced ideas off several of my colleagues, including Wiley Sword, Dave Powell, and Sam Elliott. My deep appreciation also goes to Bob Jenkins for clarifying some of the North Georgia mysteries.
1. Flawed Foundations. The Provisional Army of Tennessee.
The beginning of the Army of Tennessee was the Tennessee State Army, the so-called Provisional Army of Tennessee, under the titular leadership of Governor Isham G. Harris. It was the state army that became the genesis of the Confederate Army. From its inception, there were cracks in the foundation. Political clout, slave power, and personal friendship to the governor became the typical gateways to military commission. Desiring to reach beyond his Democratic base and cultivate the pro-slavery Whigs, Harris gave the two major general appointments to Democrats, but four of the five brigadier commissions went to Whigs. The appointments of the major generals, Gideon Pillow of Memphis and Samuel R. Anderson of Nashville, did not come as a surprise. Pillow, a two-time vice presidential aspirant, Mexican War veteran, large slaveholder, and ardent secessionist, had an 8-year association with Harris. He unquestionably had a dark side, being jealous, egotistical, and vengeful. Anderson was the 57-year-old president of the Bank of Tennessee. He had combat experience, having served as lieutenant colonel of the 1st Tennessee during the Mexican War. The five brigadiers included Benjamin F. Cheatham, the foul-mouthed, hard-drinking proprietor of the Nashville racetrack, 65-year-old Robert C. Foster, a Franklin attorney, longtime member of the Tennessee General Assembly, and veteran of the Mexican War, 41-year-old State Attorney General John L. Sneed, an old friend of Pillow's, William R. Caswell.